Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm coming to you live from the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Blaze, and today I'm lucky enough to have with me in the studio two excellent people. First off, our co-producer, Emily Acosta, who is fresh off of a victory at the Cheesemonger Invitational 2014. She won the entire thing. Emily's always in the booth with us, but you rarely hear her, but you will be hearing from her today. And we also have with us my esteemed colleague, Jason Hines, who is the export manager and has been for some time of the Neal's Yard Dairy. He is also the proprietor and founder of the Essex Street Cheese Company and the Borough Market Cheese Company, and an amazing cheese professional who I've known over half of my life. Welcome, Jason. Welcome, Emily. How are you guys today?
Couldn't be finer.
Fantastic.
Doing great.
So we wanted to do a little discussion, but first I wanted to remind you all that we're in the middle of our fund drive here at Heritage Radio. Our goal is to reach $30,000 worth of funding by July 14th, and we need you to give to the radio station. Get it out, get it done. I want to make sure that you guys know that. Jason, you're in from London, and a rare treat to see you. How you been?
I really couldn't be finer. It's great to see you, and I've had one of the best trips. I mean, I've been to this city maybe, I don't know, 60, 70 times, but this last two, 3 days has been, you know, one of the best.
Yeah, the weather's been good, and there's been a lot going on. I mean, you are representing a couple of things simultaneously.
That's right.
Your affiliation with the Neal's Yard Dairy, the premier distributor and an affiner, cheese maturers of English cheeses in the UK, and another company which you founded, which we're going to get into, called the Essex Street Cheese Company.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, the Essex Street Cheese Company, founded in 2006, is a fantastic little company that specializes in only a few cheeses from Europe. Jason had this crazy idea that was born out of a relationship that he had with a cheesemonger in a, not a intimate relationship, but a friendly relationship that he had with a cheesemonger in Paris who used to bring him some wonderful stuff. And we're going to talk about that. And the impetus for this is a great cheese that I've been really into over the last couple of years of my life. And it's Comté, which a lot of Americans, I feel, weren't aware of for many years. But a guy like Jason and his company has brought it to the forefront. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about how your obsession with this crazy cheese from the Jura started.
Well, it came about, as you just said, it started with the relationship that I had with a fantastic cheesemonger in Paris called Pascal Trotte that I sold British cheese to. And as my first customer, he also became a very good friend, and I would visit him twice a year, and we'd just, you know, we'd chat and we'd taste cheese together. And it was always the last visit that I made before I got on the Eurostar and headed back to London. And before I left, I would load up with cheese. Why wouldn't you? You're in the best cheese shop in Paris and you're just 3 hours from home. So I would always load up with, you know, the usual, you know, the usual suspects, Brie and Camembert, Roquefort, Reblochon, you know, these sorts of cheeses. And after a couple of three or four visits, Pascal said to me, and this is in the mid to late 90s, he said, why don't you never show any interest in Comté? You know, it's the locomotive of my sales, and it's my favorite cheese. So He imposed some on me, and it was a hallelujah moment.
A hallelujah moment. What is the Comté? What is it as an object? Okay.
So it's a Gruyère style cheese. That's what it looks like in terms of its format and its size. It's a hard pressed mountain style cheese. Those who are more familiar with Gruyère will know that it's quite a full flavored, sometimes sweet, salty cow's milk cheese with a really creamy, pliable texture. The older cheeses will be harder and with more crystals in them. But I think that the difference between the two is pretty straightforward. While they're made in the same region and they're divided by the Franco-Swiss border, ostensibly the Gruyère and the Comté are very similar recipes. On the Swiss side, they're saltier. They're saltier and meatier, whereas the Comté is a more gentle, slightly more refined, more honeyed character. And I like to think of them really as, you know, the Swiss Gruyère cheeses are a much more robust, in-your-face, masculine, macho cheese. They're male. And the Comté is the female of the species. A delicate, refined, and just with length, poise. And so familiar with Gruyère as I was, not a huge fan of it, I enjoyed it. I found something in Comté that really, really took me.
Well, your company, the Neil's Yard Dairy, scours the UK and finds cheeses of all manner, shape, and size, of all make. But there's not a lot of cheese made like that.
There's nothing like that really made in the UK, no.
So is that why it was a hallelujah moment?
It was a hallelujah moment because I wasn't really that familiar with a cheese of that type and quality. I hadn't had it before because my radar for that was fairly, fairly dimmed. But also, it was a sublimely well-made cheese. And also, it's just a cheese I couldn't stop eating.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's one of those very rare cheeses that has, it has a really incredible mass appeal. There's no one that you give it to taste that rejects it. Nearly any other cheese, whether it's a washed rind cheese or a blue cheese, even some a cheddar which is acidic, some people like, some people don't. You're always going to have factions who don't really care for it. But I discovered in this cheese, and it made me think, I thought more about Pascal's statement of this being the locomotive, the engine room of his business. And I understood why, because it's a profile of taste that I couldn't see anyone from a small child to an old person to someone who had eaten a lot of cheese like me, anybody that would reject that style.
It's tough to judge it poorly if it's made well.
Yeah.
Any palate, people with a very refined palate, people who like extremely strong flavors, they just can't seem to get it out of their heads.
Yeah.
And obviously neither could you, because it born out of you. Not maybe an obsession is a strong word, but a need to get more of that.
I would become fairly obsessed with it because soon after that, every subsequent trip I made to Paris, I dispensed with the acquisition of any other cheeses and just loaded
up.
No
more Reblochons,
nothing,
no more Roquefort. There was no room in the bag
I would just return with kilos of Comté. That was it. So then they said, well, look, you've seen the light. Let's take you let's take you to heaven. And so we packed our bags and we went to this stone fortress where 65,000 wheels of these cheeses were aging, late 19th century stone garrison. And
where is that located?
It's in the Jura Mountains, quite high up east part of the Jura Mountains, about 3 kilometers from the Swiss border, about an hour and a bit north of Geneva. So we went there, it was mind blowing. I really felt like I'd come to the source. It was like, for me, it felt like I was at the wellspring of cheese.
Really?
That's what it felt like.
Just
because there was so much of it. It was such a perfect environment for it. It felt, because it did feel like you felt like you're underground. You're actually under 7 meters of earth in a stone building. But you felt that you were really in the earth. The source, it really physically felt like you're at the source.
Sure.
And that this source had just yielded these thousands of cheeses that had just landed on shelves in this great big stone garrison. It felt amazing. So, but I, at that time, I was, you know, I had pretty long hair. I think I was probably wearing an AC/DC t-shirt. and I didn't look like a stereotypical cheesemonger.
Well, you would now.
But the thing is, you know, the Jura people, they're wonderful people, and I go there every month and select cheese to this day. So I've been there, well, over 100 times now. But at that time, they didn't get so many visitors from abroad, and they treated me with the sort of suspicion and derision I think they felt I deserved. And you know,
so you went to the fortress to start buying just entire wheels for personal use.
I went to the fortress just as an invite of Pascal.
I get you.
And but so I was just there. I was a tourist. I should have been somebody that was just a visitor that you'd imagine they would they would welcome as a visitor of one of their best customers.
Sure.
But no. I was given the third degree before I was allowed to cross the threshold into this stone fortress because I didn't look like a cheat. You know, I was English number one. I had pretty long hair, and I looked nothing like their sort of vision of what a cheesemonger should look like.
Right.
So my credentials were sorely tested. You know, there was lots of discussions on the threshold about, you know, British farming practices, raw milk, silage and the use of silage in the production of milk. You know, so it was half an hour before I was even allowed in the building. And then once I was in the building, and this was the head of the chef de cave, the head cheese maturer, Claude, who's now become a great friend. He was the guy that was treating me with his deep suspicion. And so finally I was allowed in. But as we went to go through and start tasting the cheeses, you know, normally we taste the cheeses and he tastes it first and then it goes around and you get bit will come to you and everyone will have an opinion about how the cheese tastes. But he turned to me first and said, "What do you taste?" Which is pretty intimidating. I'd never been there before. I didn't know this cheese. And there all of a sudden he's putting me on the spot.
Sure. Wicked. To see how good you were.
It was wicked. I mean, it was unfair. So it raised my hackles. I'll have to confess. And
well, you're a cheese professional. I mean, you were running the Neil's Yard Dairy.
You
don't want to mess with you.
I think I surprised him, and in the end I passed the test, but not before my hackles had been raised.
Sure.
And I was just going there to visit, with the view that we would then go back to Paris later that afternoon, and then I'd go home. But I was sufficiently vexed that I thought, right, I'm going to buy 50 wheels of cheese. I didn't have any.
That'll show up.
I didn't have any money for it. I'd just not recently gone through a divorce, so I was skint. You know, I had nowhere to sell this cheese. You know, I can't sell it at Neil's Yard Dairy. We sell British cheese. So, I just wanted to stick one up Claude. So I thought, right, sure. I'm going to buy 50 wheels of this cheese.
Makes a lot of sense.
It was June. I want 50 wheels. That's what I want. Deliver it in December, beginning of. And so I didn't think anything more about it until sort of middle of November when
showed up.
Imminence of this cheese showing up. I had to quickly scamper to borrow $5,000 and then work out how on earth I was going to sell this cheese.
Sure.
I managed it. We sold it on the borough market. We fly pitched on a butcher's stand, which caused a lot of consternation amongst the other traders because you weren't supposed to be able to fly pitch like that.
And you're talking about piggybacking, so rented a little space at the butcher's stand and said, "I'm going to sell my cheese."
He said, "Well, why don't you just sell it on my stand?" But that's completely against the protocol of. Yeah. Trading on borough market, and it was the people took a dim view of it.
And the borough market is an amazing outdoor market underneath London Bridge,
yeah.
And one that your company, in fact, helped to revitalize years. So you pulled rank a little bit to get a.
I'd like to think that I didn't. Perhaps I did. But either way, I had to get this stuff sold.
Yeah, of course.
It needed selling, and lo and behold, you know, we actually sold it before Christmas, and I had to order some more. So what ended up just being a purchase that was made in a fit of pique, I thought, my word, there's a business here.
That's fantastic. Mm. And from that was born not the Essex Street Cheese Company, but the Borough Market Cheese Company.
Yeah, the Borough Cheese Company is the UK entity. And then not too long after we started that, you know, the vision was to have a company that sold one cheese and one cheese only, because the cheese is so good, and if you go and select and get the best stuff, you have a viable business just selling one cheese. For me, that was my image of the perfect cheese retail business. So we built piles of cheese that stood, 6 feet high, the height of a man, with probably, I don't know, third of a ton of cheese on the display all on one table. Wow. Visually, huge impact. And, you know, before long, we found ourselves in a situation where we had this display, this stand of cheese, as I say, 6 foot high, could be seen from lots of, you know, a great distance,
sure,
with a diamond formation of people. That's four people selling it.
The diamond formation. What's that for now?
So the diamond formation was one in the crowd tasting out small pieces of cheese, two people selling, and one person behind them cutting. So
sounds a lot like a soccer football setup.
That's the I think that the term has been, I borrowed it from football, but it was a formation that allowed us to sell in 7 hours about 450 pounds of cheese.
That's amazing.
Of one type, yeah.
And I worked with you,
you did,
in that market.
It
was quite a thing to pull a sled with a half a ton of Comté across the frozen tundra of London, and got off a plane about 4 hours before then, and just slung that out. But it was amazing to do, and out of that vision, something I find really interesting, and I hope you can expound on, I discovered personally the cheese Comté, because as an American cheesemonger, that had been in my scope, and even cheeses from the fortress that you mentioned were available in very, very limited quantity, the quality was always high, but Swiss Gruyere had dominated the market. That was what you got.
Absolutely.
The dairies were industrial. They pumped out a lot of cheese.
Yeah.
But this Comté thing was much different, and I found a kind of magic in selling it, and I joined forces with you and our friend Daphne Zeppos, and joined up with you in the Essex Street Cheese Company.
Yeah.
And I was wondering maybe if you could tell me what the Essex Street Cheese Company was all about,
so,
and its origin.
So, I took Daphne, who was a dear friend I'd known since the mid-90s, to visit on one of these visits to go and select cheese for the Borough Cheese Company. She joined me, and she was just blown away by it. She couldn't believe it. It was the cheese of her dreams, and the idea of doing the purity, I think, of the business that we had is something that really spoke to her. And so she said, right, well, as soon as we came back from the trip, we were back in London, she said, I want to do something like this in America. And I said, no, and she insisted that she wanted to do it with me. She would only do it with me. But I said, I can't. I haven't got time for it. Sorry, too much going on, and a young family, there's a lot happening, we haven't got time for it. But she was like a dog with a bone, and every quarter or so, we would hook up, because I'd be in America fairly frequently, and the conversation would be had again, after about 2 years she broke me down and said, broke me down, and I agreed that to set up a company with her, a wholesale company. And we started thinking about, how we're going to structure that company. The name came up. So having agreed, we started thinking about what we're going to call it. And I on my regular trips to New York, would always go to the Lower East Side. This is quite a while ago now. This is about, 10 plus years ago.
Sure.
To buy sneakers in this incredible sneaker shop, which is just behind the Essex Market. It's a strange,
it fell through a doorway into this rundown.
You press the buzzer, this door opened, and then you would walk in and come out the back into a room where there was these sort of oak paneled shelving units with sneakers in that you would never have seen at a sneaker shop. So I'd always go there, and after after one such visit, I stumbled into the Essex Street Market. And I thought, wow, this is an incredible place. I went and found the market manager. And we'd really been struggling with the name. And while the intention was not, Daphne's and my intention was not to start a retail company, it was to do a wholesale company, I thought, well, perhaps we could do a bit of retail. And if we did, we could do it here. Because having met the market manager, there was a space. It was a small space. The rent was incomprehensibly cheap, and so I thought maybe this is doable. So that that purchase of a pair of sneakers, ended up giving us the name of the company.
But you mentioned that that Daphne found a kind of magic in the business model and a purity, but I understand that because you're a businessman and a very good one. Mm. But the magic to me is in the cheese, right? So you were drawn there by the Essex Street Cheese Company is a much different place now, a different business now. Mm. You have
four
types of cheese. Correct. But it started with Conte.
Correct.
and her vision and combined with yours, or she made you realize yours, why was the cheese, what was the purity of that cheese? Like, what did the Comté represent to you both, and what did you find that it represented, to the world at large around it, where it was made?
For me, it was the complete, it was a desert island cheese. It's probably two or three cheeses.
That I would
classify as desert island cheeses. It's a complete cheese. With the perfect Conte, there's no flaw in it. Like I said, it's a cheese for, there's almost no type of person that would not want it. So commercially speaking, that's what you want in any product that you might be selling, sure. Something that everyone wants. But then it's the complexity and the sophistication and the range of flavor. It's that that excited me and excited Daphne the most. How much range you have within that fortress, which has got, say, the cheeses of 15 producers, but you go through a whole range from that one producer in that one month, and you go through a myriad of different flavors, all of them really interesting.
Sure.
But it's such a broad range that I hadn't come across when tasting some of the cheeses that I select for Neil's Yard Dairy. So it was that complexity and range that for me was the most that was the most seducing thing of all. And for sure, that was what seduced Daphne. There's no question about it.
I always think when I taste cheese, and something I always mention and talk about with cheesemongers is the sensory experience and memory, locked in memory. So when I've eaten the Comté, I'm always transported. Mm. And I mean, that's just how I live my life. Mm. Do you find that to be true? When you say you're speaking in technical terms about flavor, which is fantastic, and you're going into a place where cheeses are graded on a technical level.
Yeah.
But did the Conte transport you or give you? Do you believe in that sort of thing?
Oh, totally. In this particular instance, it's special again because whenever we go and interact with the cheese, we're not just interacting with the cheese. We go to, Dominic, a business partner in the Borough Cheese Company, and I go to the fort and select the cheese once a month. So we are physically displaced into this beautiful countryside. So I am literally transported into this incredible countryside, Montbéliard cows with their bells dinging. Then you arrive, literally at the moat of this castle.
That's amazing.
Where the cheese is living, and then you go into it, and you're surrounded. Like I said, it's like the wellspring of cheese. And after a lot of tasting of cheese, an hour or 2 hours of tasting of cheese, we then have with the guys from the region who are long-standing friends of mine. We have Jura wine, we have Saucisse de Mordor, we have all these products.
I've been in the fortress, and they make you eat a massive amount of cheese in that place.
Well, the thing is, the irony is you eat all this cheese, and you sit down, and what do you have? Fondue.
Yeah.
Sweet. I mean, that suits me just fine. For some people, it might be a bit much. But so we are literally transported into this area, into this region, into these mountains, into this terroir, into this taste.
Yeah.
With the wine that is some of my favorite wine in the world, the wines from the Jura, the slightly oxidized
Chardonnay
wines.
Chardonnay, that's from there. Slightly. Bois,
exactly. God, that's these so slightly good. Oxidized wines, which with a cheese that's as rich and creamy as Conte is, the beauty of these wines is that they have, because of the oxidization, this wonderful cut. And all the food they eat up there, is so rich. Half the year,
a lot of mushrooms up there.
They eat a lot of potatoes, eat a lot of cream, they eat a lot of sausage, they eat a lot of cheese. You don't see anything green until March, and then when you do, it's not salad, it's a frog. That's the frog season, which happens in March for 3 weeks. So you don't see really any salad until May. And so it's as well that you've got this wine with the cut in it, because it cuts through the richness of all this food that they eat.
Well, Jason, thank you so much. We're going to have to take a short break, but we're going to come back and talk more with Jason Hines and Emily Acosta about Conte and about some other things. Thanks so much.
Hey, I'm Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. Do you love us? Do you really? Do you count on us for real food news and content? Well, we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means we depend on underwriting, grants, and the support of members like you to keep broadcasting. Help keep our voice alive. Visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button today. We promise to never stop in our mission to create a world that's more sustainable, equitable, and delicious by expanding the way eaters think about food. Thanks for listening, and thanks for showing your support.
Hello, do-it-yourselfer. Ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at BonniePlants.com.
This is Brooks Headley, the pastry chef at Del Posto in Manhattan, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm here again with Jason Hines of the Essex Street Cheese Company and Emily Acosta of Eataly and Cutting the Curd. We're just talking with Jason about the origins of his company, the Essex Street Cheese Company, born out of the cheese Conte, and sort of the effect that it has on him or had on him, and why it's this locomotive of his sales, but also I feel like a perfect food product because it's making you talk about other things like wine and the flora of the region, the people that you met there. And I think that that's a great thing about cheese for me and for you, is that you can be physically transported to the places where you get it, but it also takes you to other places while you eat it, and it pulls other parts of the territory in, or the terroir in. There's another thing I wanted to talk to you about, and it's cultural terroir. And as a person who's visited the Jura, I feel that the Conte is the cultural terroir. I mean, would I be out of line?
Not at all. No.
And why is that? Maybe you could speak to that, or speak of that to us.
The cultural terroir of the Jura.
Yeah. And Conte as the link.
There's few cheese regions that you'll visit where the cheese is such a central part of the culture, and of the economy, because whole villages, the center point in many of the villages in the areas in the Jura, in the Jura region, in, well, it's not just the Jura. There's actually three departments, states, if you like, that compose the Franche-Comté, and Comté is made in all of those. So you've got a couple of hundred facilities that make this cheese, and in many of them, apart from the very large ones, they're made in small villages, in creameries that feature right in the middle of the village. And so it's at the heart of it. It's the heart of hundreds of villages in the Jura is the creamery, which is co-owned by the dairy farmers that own the farms that are around that village. So
it's really agrarian society.
It really is. Yeah. So these dairy farmers, they bring their milk twice a day to the creamery, and they all get together. It's a meeting point. Twice a week, they would bring their milk. Twice a day, they would bring their milk to the creamery. So it's a central point, a central meeting point in the village, it's what drives the economy of the village to this day. And it's not just the cheese, aside from that, it's a big producing area for spruce. Why? Because spruce is what the boards are made out of that the Conte goes into.
Right.
So, even for the dairy, when we were doing, building out,
Neil's Yard Dairy,
we bought all our wood boards from there because they're the best boards, because these guys know about making boards, and then that's a topical situation.
That's fantastic.
It's topical right now.
Sure.
Wooden boards.
Absolutely.
But
wood is good.
These guys in the Jura, that's what they know about it. They've been making boards to sit cheese on for hundreds of years.
That's fantastic.
And so, the very fabric of the region is about cheese. The trees that are growing are many of them destined to be turned into cheese boards, And of course, outside of the physical infrastructure that goes into the cheese, there's all the pasture, and particularly in these summer months that we're in now, when you go up into the higher pasture and the areas that the most of the Marcel Petit creameries are based, are higher pasture than most of the other maturers that also sell Conte, because it's not just Marcel
Petit. There's two fortresses that do this in this region. The Fortress Rousse.
Yeah, correct.
And the Marcel Petit. Yeah. And I've always been told that the Rousse takes a lot of the cheeses from the valley. And the Marcel Petit takes the mountain cheeses.
Broadly speaking, that's correct.
I mean, in a very broad way.
Yeah, and what that means in terms of terroir, in terms of complexity of milk for making cheese, is that in those summer months, which is when the majority of the milk is available, the cows are on this pasture, and the higher you go, the cooler it is. There's still lots of sunshine, but you get a much, much broader mix of wild grasses and flowers.
Sure.
So at the kind of altitude that the petite producers are making, the cows are grazing at, say, between 700 and 900 meters, whereas a lot of the others will be grazing lower than 600. So in the summer months, it's more grass. Yeah. If it's hot, it's more like hay.
Sure.
Whereas in the higher pastures, you might have, you know, up to 100 different varieties of wild grass and flour in this milk, which is giving you a milk of incredible complexity, yeah, which makes for a cheese that... And that's what makes the cheese special. That's what gives it its range of flavour, is the quality and range of flavour in the milk. You can't make great cheese out of bad milk.
And that's why I would say that's probably what drew you in, was that, you know?
I love cheese, I love people, and I love that region, because they're a very, you know, although as a hirsute mid-30-year-old wearing an AC/DC t-shirt, I was treated with a certain amount of suspicion, probably quite rightly so. Now many of the people of this region I'm incredibly close to and very fond of.
I find I love that, and just what you've been speaking about with the region and how you discovered it is one of the best things for me about cheesemongery, or being a part of the cheese industry, is when you're able to go to these areas that you know are out there, but you sort of discover them for yourselves, and you see, you find this wellspring of cheese and this culture that revolves around it, almost like untouched by like sometimes horrible industrial nature of our world. And you get this chance to preserve it, you know, or just to be a part of it.
Mm-mm.
You know, and I find that for me, like that's the most amazing thing, you know,
definitely.
And for my part, your company, all of the cheeses that you sell and the people that proffer them, I feel are all born out of that. And that was really what I wanted to get down to, is talking to you.
Yeah.
Was that?
And I think that's one of the things that makes the Essex Street Cheese Company a fairly unique company, in that, you know, we celebrate the cheeses that we think are, you know, best in class, and we, as you say, we only have four, but we don't celebrate the cheese, just the cheese themselves, but we're also working in partnership with individuals, with real people that are as, you know, that we're presenting as much as we're presenting the cheese, because they are the voice of not just the cheese, but the area that they're coming from. And when they come to the States, they're talking about, you know, where they're from, what their habits are, why this cheese is special, why they're so passionate about this cheese, their country, their region, their wine, their food, in a way that I can communicate, and, you know, I can communicate that passion for the cheeses from the United Kingdom, because that's where I'm from and that's what I know. And I can sympathise with, you know, the qualities of Conte, because I'm a big fan of it. But I can't speak with quite the same passion about that as, say, Philippe can, nor can I.
Philippe Gou.
Yes, nor can I speak with the same passion about the Gouda as, say, Betty, who's
Betty Coster and Martin Coster are part of the Essex Street Cheese Company.
Yeah.
They sell La Muse Gouda, and they have two cheese shops in Amsterdam. And they're delightful people. We do a whole 10-hour show on that. And then Philippe Gou is the sales and marketing director for the Fortress of San Antoine. Then there is Giorgio Cravero, a Parmigiano maven and a selector, and then a Manchego producer.
Correct.
his name?
Jose Luis Martin.
And yeah. So these guys have gone to these, it's like a four square, these sort of four corners, and gotten these iconic cheeses, Parmigiano and Conte and Cauda and Manchego.
And the vision for that was in a way inspired by the simplicity of, and purity of the vision that we had for the Borough Cheese Company just doing a retail operation around one cheese. I spoke a lot to Daphne about my vision for the perfect wholesale company, which is a wholesale company that actually doesn't have a great big catalogue with pages and pages and pages of entries, but just one page of 6 to 10 cheeses.
It's a beautiful thing. I was happy to be a part of it when I worked with you guys. Yeah. I worked in that market, in the Essex market, with Jason, and sold a lot less wheels of Conte than I sold in the Borough market. But it was an amazing experience, and I got to work with one of my best friends, Daphne Zeppos, when she was around, and that was a special time for me. And I think I saw your vision, as I always have. You're that kind of guy, you know. So anybody who has a chance to do business where they learn about the Essex Street Cheese Company, I really, really encourage you to get involved in that. If you want to learn about cheese and also eat some of the best cheese in the world, you got to hook up with these guys. Mm. I was wondering if you minded just for a little bit, Jason, because last night, Jason is in town for the Fancy Food Show in New York City, and also for a great competition revolving around cheese that takes place in Long Island City. It's called the Cheesemonger Invitational. And our co-producer here, Emily Acosta, who says very little but does quite a lot, was the winner of this competition last evening. So we wanted to congratulate you, Emily. Congratulations.
Gosh, thank you so much.
You're still in shock.
I'm still a little bit in shock. I'm just so excited. This is such a dream.
Emily's a fantastic cheesemonger, and I think it's interesting. I plan to have Jason in here, and Jason, the Essex Street Cheese Company, sponsors as one of the sponsors of the CMI. And I said to Jason, "You got to meet this person. She's a great cheesemonger." And he's like, "All right, I'll check it out." But then, somewhere during this competition, he was struck, knowing that we had the winner in and amongst us, and I was wondering if you could expound on that, because it was really cool.
Well, I think that I mean the Larkin is, for those who haven't been there, is this, you know, it's a real building.
It's a warehouse.
Building. And you know, there's a lot of you know, real cheesemongers, a lot of tattoos, and there's a lot of dedication to cheese. And then in all of that, there was this sort of this apparition emerged, as Greg introduced me to you, Emily, and I thought, this is something different, and then as the disciplines wore on, it was clear that it was more than just an apparition. There was a really sophisticated cheesemonger here, and you seem to be progressing better and better and better through the conversation, through the competition, and then there was the presentation of a cheese.
Yes,
and you captured everyone's attention in that. There was a lot of people in there by that point.
There was a goodly amount of folks.
Well, I know there was 750 tickets sold, something like that. There's got to be in the region of 1,000 people in the room at the point that Emily takes the mic.
And my palms are sweating, just remembering and thinking about it.
Sings her appreciation of her favorite cheese, and the whole place was arrested. even Adam was speechless.
Adam Moskowitz is the man behind
Mr. Moo.
Mr. Moo.
Yeah. No.
The owner of Larkin and the founder of the competition.
Yeah, it was Adam's vision for the competition, and what an amazing competition it is. But even he, I think, was caught out and was speechless by the sweet sound of your voice. And from that point on, it was for me, it was in the bag.
Oh, that's so great.
Absolutely in the bag.
So nice of you to say. I know, I don't know where the courage came from to sing a cheese song, but I sang cheese songs behind the counter all the time. So perhaps sometimes to the annoyance of my coworkers, but
never. But what's impressive to me, I mean, and I work with you, is that, yeah, you did that. You stood out amongst the competition. You won the competition, and congratulations. But the fundamentals of that competition are cutting cheese and wrapping cheese and keeping your station clean and selling cheese to people. And
you can't
how much
it.
Do you know? You can't fake your way through that, and you're up there with the best. And you emerged victorious among those people. And I think you were a person that people maybe didn't expect to do that, but you shocked them.
It's like Costa Rica winning the World Cup.
Yeah, it's gosh, such an honor. I know it's my first time entering the competition, and there were so many talented people and that I got to meet, and I'm just really excited to have met so many people. It was just such a great weekend.
Well, Emily, we're happy to have you here with us in the booth, and we're happy to have you, you know, amongst our, like, crazy band of cheesemongers. You're in now. You're in for life. You got a tattoo on you that says cheese for life.
I we're do. Gonna hold it's you still, to that. Still on.
So I want to say thanks to Jason for coming out, one of my favorite people, and talking to us about Conte.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me, Greg.
You're the best. Come by anytime you're in town.
Yeah, we'll do.
And I want to say thanks again to Emily, who's always here, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
We'll stay tuned to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. Have a good afternoon.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.